Columbus Dispatch Public Affairs Editor Daryl Roland. Welcome back.
Hi, Ann. Great to be here.
Cincinnati Inquirer State Government Reporter Jesse Ballmer. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And State House Reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Jim Siegel. Welcome back.
Good morning.
We got another dispatch double team in here today, Jesse.
I'm just here to break things up.
Right.
She's here to fact check us. Really.
Jim, you've been covering the issue, the committee, that study committee that the governor appointed. I would say came out in record time with a report.
Well, sure, it's pretty easy to come out with a report in record time when that's what the governor who puts together the committee schedules two hearings, has the governor's administration write the report from the committee. I mean, yeah, you can do that pretty quickly. Puts a bunch of people on the committee who are inclined to support a gas tax. the record time is not a surprise. It's plus the fact that, you know, we're trying to put this into the transportation budget, which actually has to be passed by March 31st. So it's not like we have a lot of time to sit around and gum over this too much. they came out with what was expected at the beginning, which is there's really no other options in the short term that are feasible to raise revenue for roads than increasing the gas tax. Now, there are certainly desires among many folks to try to come up with some ways to better capture revenue from all the vehicles on the roads and do it efficiently for the long term, whether that be miles traveled or other ways. But for now, I mean, if you basically the choice is, if you want to continue to fund major road projects and you don't want to fall further behind on maintenance, we need more money. We haven't raised the tax, the 28-cent gas tax, since 2005, and it's inflation has, of course, eaten into that. Since then, and so if you want those things, then you're going to need more money.
Where did the $1 billion amount come from per year for maintenance and construction?
That was from Jack Marshbanks, he's Governor DeWine's new transportation director, the head of ODOT, in other words, and he calculated that was, and again, that's a per year need that the state will have to fix roads for new construction, things of that nature. Now, is that a wish list or whatever? Perhaps to some extent. And that's where you do the math and you get this 24-cent per gallon increase. Now, not all of that would go to the state by formula, unless they change the formula.
But
on a current formula, a chunk of that goes to local. So to get that full billion for the state, you have to pop on another 24 cents, which is virtually doubling the state gas tax, which, you know, is probably going to be a hard sell.
Yeah, so, and this is in part for safety, it's in part for renovations, in part for new projects, and it's really looking at where the roads will be by 2030 if there's not an infusion of money. Now, I think lawmakers could look at that and decide, you know, we want to resolve this to address the needs of 2025 or something a little closer and look at a smaller number than $1 billion a year, but that was what ODOT came up as their number that they're asking for.
Yeah, I think it's an average over 10 years.
Yeah, it's an average
over 10 years. $1 billion
number. Yeah, thank you.
And
yeah.
Before that, the state was selling bonds and that kind of a thing, the turnpike bonds.
Well, the state over the years has covered up the revenue problem with some bonding and some borrowing against future gas tax, bonding against future turnpike tolls. That was more recent. Back in 2013, but that money raised $1.5 billion, which again it masked the fact that we were not bringing in enough gas tax money to cover our needs, and it did so for about 5 years. But that money's gone now. I mean, it's all been accounted for. Some of it's still being spent on projects that are currently in progress, but there's no money left to do additional major construction projects, interstate projects that need to be finished, including like 7071 here in Columbus. Some would say it was a good strategy to kind of keep us going without having to raise taxes. Others would argue it was simply putting continuing Band-Aids on problems that without addressing the root issue of revenue. And now we're paying about $390 million on our debt. So $390 million of our transportation money is going toward that, instead of going toward maintenance and future projects. Basically, Jack Marshbanks said, look, we're paying for past projects now instead of paying for future ones. And that's not sustainable if you want to have a good transportation system.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. That's Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch also with us. Daryl Rowland, public affairs editor for the Dispatch. And Jesse Balmert, state government reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Daryl, it's going to be a hard sell. I mean, state lawmakers, when people go over potholes on state highways, they're going to go to their state lawmaker for that, right?
That's true, but you have such an incredible anti-tax atmosphere in both the House and the Senate now that even the most, if there is such a thing as a popular tax increase, this would probably be one to fix roads. I think there's a natural inclination to do that. I happened to run past Senate President Aboff, and I'm sure Jesse and Jim have talked to him as well. And I just half seriously, half jokingly said, well, you know, how many cents of a gas and tax increase are you going to project? Are you going to approve? He said 0.0. So
wow.
Whether that's hard and fast, whether that's just sort of, well, I can't just come right out and cave right away to a tax increase and, you know, we'll go up from here, whatever. But that's why I say it's a, you know, there's a steep prejudice against tax increases of any kind. My goodness, Jim and Marty Schladen wrote about a loophole in the pass-through tax. And, you know, Jim's here. He can clean me up if I misstate this, which I probably will. But basically, programs for the poor are now being taken advantage of by those who are not poor because of how that tax was set up. Some people said, well, yeah, we need to fix that, but it was never intended. There's not been one move. I don't think anyone's even suggested legislation or anything to close that little loophole. So people who make over, you know, $250,000 a year are not taking advantage of homestead exemption tax or whatever meant for much lower incomes. So, you know, because that could be regarded
as
a tax increase,
right?
Even though some would say, well deserved, and all you're doing is fixing a flaw in the original bill. So the influence of, you know, love him or hate him, Grover Norquist, we have a larger Republican majority. The tax hikes are an anathema to many, many legislators. So this is going to be a test, because if you can't pass a gas tax increase, I'm not saying the full 24 cents, but if you can't pass a tax increase to fix the roads, you got no hope for raising revenue, I don't think, for education or anything else you might say is needed.
Someone on social media warned that if we don't get our roads fixed, we're going to have roads like Michigan. And the outcry was kind of hilarious.
Actually, when the director Marchbanks was presenting information to lawmakers about the state of our roads, and he used an example of a really bad road, he put up a picture of a road from Michigan. So the rivalry is strong. But yeah, to the point of the gas tax, I think that was John Kasich's team's approach, was they didn't think that they could get a gas tax passed increase. That's why they went this turnpike route. I think especially after the recession, they felt like it just was not palatable to people. And so they went with the turnpike and this debt allocation and so forth. So it's always going to be a tough sell. I do think if we go from a 28-cent gas tax to adding 24 cents on that, that's going to be a steep price for some people. But you have like Pennsylvania next door, and their gas taxes 58.7 cents. So we are lower than some states in our area.
Yeah, I think just about everybody except Kentucky is lower or is higher than us right now, and Kentucky is only 2 cents lower. So it's not significantly lower. Which one of the things you'll notice is some of the supporters of this, including I think that report, are calling it a motor fuel user fee. They're trying to get around the word gas tax.
Oh yeah, a revenue enhancement.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We're not raising taxes. We're charging you a user fee to use the roads.
Well,
which okay, whatever, you know. And I've had a number of these folks try to, you know, tell me that, you know, use that term with me, and I basically tell them yes, but gas tax is a lot fewer words in my story, so that's not the one I'm going to use, and because people know what a gas tax is, and that's what it's been called forever, so we're going to keep calling it that. But yeah, it's going to be difficult to get this through the legislature, but look, if you can't pass a gas tax now, when we're coming off of what, 8 years, 10 years of economic growth, and gas prices are at some of their lowest points they've been, and it's particularly if you take account for inflation that they've been in, you know, decades, then you'll never get one.
Let's see. Paul in Worthington, you're on the air. What's your idea?
Well, I wondered if the commission had considered raising auto registration fees rather than slapping on a gas tax, mainly because thinking of the future, there's going to be many more fuel-efficient cars, so it means that less revenue would be derived from slapping the tax on there, and of course there will be electric cars as well. But I'm going to hang up and let the panel discuss this. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
That has been discussed, and in fact, you know, that the idea of putting a special fee on hybrids and electric cars is also being discussed. There's two issues though there with that. The number one issue is that it just doesn't raise enough money.
There aren't enough of them out there yet.
Right. I think the estimates at the of ODOT found that if you put on a what would be considered a moderate fee on those kind of vehicles, you'd raise less than $5 million a year. So we're not talking about a whole lot there yet. And just raising the overall fees. One of the concerns there is that a lot of our gas tax captures revenue from folks driving through the state who don't live here. If you start just putting, if you try to do it all with fees, now you're only capturing money from people living within the state. You're not mm-hmm. capturing money from coming those traveling using our roads traveling mm-hmm. through the state, including a number
which is significant.
Obviously a number of trucks travel through our interstates on their way to other locations around the country. But again, they are looking at trying to figure there is some discussion trying to figure out how we can do this better than the gas tax, because there is a realization that is becoming more and more inefficient when it comes to raising money for roads.
Kevin in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the gas tax. I don't think the gas tax would be the right way to go about it. I think we need to do some sort of financial audit on the contractors that we're hiring to do these jobs. I'm not directly involved with the industry, but I do have some friends that are involved with the road industry. And it's like every time they get a contract from the city or the state, you know, they're high-fiving. They're buying new equipment. You know, they're paying workers a very unsavory wage, and they're using a real low-quality product. I think if we actually looked where the money is going and what it's being invested into, we'd get a lot further than just simply.
What do you mean by what do you mean by an unsavory wage? You mean a good wage for the workers, or what? What do you mean?
They're severely underpaid. Basically, you know, we're landing. This is anecdotal, obviously, but the people that I'm involved with, you know, every time they get a government contract for a road, it's like, you know, they're buying new trucks, they're buying new equipment, mm-hmm. and then they're just hiring random Joe Schmoes off the street for $10 an hour, mm-hmm. and then they're just using the most basic product they can to get the job done. I think if we actually looked at how much we're paying these people and what products they're using and what kind of workers that they're hiring, I think we might be able to stretch what we have a little bit further than simply doubling mm-hmm. the gas tax. And I'll take my comment off the air.
All right, Kevin. Thank you for that call. I mean, there's specs, though, involved in these kinds of things. When you do a project on a highway, a state,
sure,
they dictate.
And
what,
I, you know, I think Kevin's suggestion would probably be popular. And you know, if we're talking about you know, almost doubling a tax,
look at both sides of the equation.
Whatever. What kind of a bang for the buck are we getting now? Can it be spent more efficiently? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would hope that, you know, that ODOT could make the case for that. And you're right. Bid specs should control the quality of the payment. It's gone down, for heaven's
right.
sakes. Now, as you know, from, you know, back in the day to this very day, the wars between the asphalt pavers and the concrete pavers mm-hmm. in Ohio, and the asphalt pavers have prevailed mainly in recent years. So that's affected what's going on our roads a lot. But there's a lot of point counterpoint to it. But it would be interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a study quite of that nature.
I think that'd be a good idea politically, basically for lawmakers and the governor to say, look, if we want to raise the gas tax by whatever, but we're also going to make sure that we're going to do that kind of a study, and we're going to make sure that we're getting the quality we need so that these roads aren't just turning around and falling apart on us.
Right.
But by March 30th, of course, is the bugaboo if we're talking about the transportation budget.
Chop, chop.
Yeah. We just rocketed through the lame duck session at the end of last year. Now we're just, you know, in snail's pace.
Back, back at the tortoise.
Yeah,
We are, well, we have a few callers and they want to talk about the gas tax and, you know, as people are wont to do when we talk about tax increases. So we'll get to those when we come back. This is our weekly reporter roundtable. You just heard from Daryl Rowland. He's public affairs editor at the Columbus Dispatch. Also with us from the Dispatch, Jim Siegel. And from the Cincinnati Enquirer, Jesse Balmert. So if you want to weigh in on this gas tax increase proposal from the commission that the governor appointed and you know, please do. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Jesse Balmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch, and his colleague, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch. We've been talking about the proposed gas tax that came out of a commission that the governor appointed. They had two meetings, and bing, boom, bang, they had a 24-cent taxing per gallon tax increase proposal out there.
They did not recommend an amount.
They said what it would take to raise the billion.
Well, ODOT said what it could take. The commission said, yeah, we do need a gas tax increase, but declined to go as far as the any amount.
I apologize.
Sorry.
That's why I have the pros in here to keep me on the straight and narrow. So what do you think? 614-292-8513. We'll spend a few more minutes on this. Let's see. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hi. Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
So I'm a design engineer at ODOT, and I just thought I'd offer some insight in some of the process if you guys had any questions. I mean, I heard one guy talking about how, you know, contractors were high-fiving each other once they do work for us. And I do know that we do have some things, some processes to help counter that. For example, when we create plans to do work on our roads, we submit it for a bid process that multiple contractors bid against each other on, and we obviously go with the lowest bidder. And, you know, this kind of keeps some of the money management in check in terms of, you know, making sure we're not overspending too much on one particular contractor. And so I just wanted to give that kind of insight.
Well, Chris, let me ask you, you said you go with the lowest bidder, but do you go with the best bid, I guess, is what, because Kevin also mentioned that the work, you know, about the shoddiness of the work and the materials.
I wish I could say we always went with the best bid, but since we're dealing with taxpayer money, the general rule is we go with the lowest bid.
Okay.
Now, if you deal with a contractor that has, you know, made a lot of mistakes over the years, you know, typically there is a process we can kind of flag them and, you know, maybe some steps can be taken to avoid them in the future. But typically it's always the lowest bid. And that's just kind of how government work gets shelled out in general.
Okay.
Well, Chris, do you have this is Daryl Rowland? Do you not have inspectors on the site? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, to say, you know, that pavement is the right depth, it's the right composition, things of that nature.
Absolutely. Most of the time, we do have employees out there checking over things, making sure everything gets paid, everything gets done correctly, and you know, we pay for the things that are being done out there. So we do have a lot of things in place to make sure money is managed correct, taxpayer money is managed correctly when we work with those contractors.
Chris, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You bet. Kathleen in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Ann. Yeah, I think that there has been some short-sightedness in not raising the gas tax when we had historically low gas prices over the last 10 years. But now that it looks like we probably will, I would say let's not be short-sighted again. And I would hope we would earmark some of the revenue from that gas tax increase to take cars off the road. I mean, you can repair roads, and you can also have roads last longer by reducing traffic. And so let's do something about public transit. For example, more park and rides, subsidizing the cities, the bus lines that help get people downtown, you know, almost as fast as they could if they were driving themselves, or maybe even faster. And even looking at keeping people off of the highways within the city by doing some things around sidewalks that get people to the bus stop. So that's my thought.
Okay. Kathleen, thanks a lot. What is the...
Sure.
The... I mean, do they typically include non-road, non-bridge-related projects in the transportation budget anymore these days?
I don't think that's the norm. I'm not 100% sure if any of them are included. That has been a point of criticism of this group that Governor DeWine assembled, was that there are not people kind of advocating for transit and busing
on this commission,
that was recommending the gas tax, that perhaps there just was not enough focus on those alternatives. And I know there was a group that kind of got together and you know, sent a letter saying that there needs to be more focus on this. Mm. It is underfunded mm-hmm. in the state overall. So I think there hasn't
been a lot
of... Yeah,
because if you build the roads, you have to repair them. If you get people off the roads, there's less wear and tear.
Mm-hmm. There mm-hmm. has been a push to focus more on transit from those who, you know, really see that as a value, but it has not been a huge focus of DeWine's committee.
Right.
Yeah, and we are woefully low in spending per capita on public transit.
Compared to the rest of the country?
Compared to the nation. I mean, mm-hmm. we are way behind other states. And I was trying to find the number off here, but I don't have it off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But I know that I've seen it, and it is, I mean, it's really bad how little we spend compared to other states on public transit. And look, there are some who are pushing for this are also arguing, look, we need to – this isn't just about fixing today's roads. We need to come up – we need to fund the future transportation as well. We need to – you know, things like Hyperloop, things like making sure we have roads that are able to handle autonomous vehicles in that sense. So, you know, none of this is going to be cheap. It's all going to cost money. And that's one thing people always have to remember about roads. You don't pave a road and then you're done. You gotta keep maintenance on it, and then in 5 to 7 years you gotta pave it again.
And,
so it's just an unending cycle.
Engineers are saying that with the way the climate's changing, you can take this year's a perfect example of these really extreme high temperatures and really yep. very extreme low temperatures just wreak havoc. I don't use that phrase that often, but on the roads. Hey, Jamie in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Jamie.
Hi there. I'd like to see us raise the gas tax because it creates a more appropriate, fair payment structure for the road use. It'll drive good behaviors like pushing us towards efficient vehicles, electric vehicles, public transit by raising the price of driving your own car. And likewise, it'll reduce road wear because we'll be driving lighter, more fuel-efficient vehicles.
Jamie, thanks a lot for that call. I mean, so Jamie's saying this could be a policy issue.
Incentivizing. Yeah, it is amazing how in Ohio we have the economic, I don't want to overstate tragedy, but certainly a huge blow to the Mahoning Valley area. Gordstown is closing.
Yeah.
And GM is closing that because it made the Chevy Cruze, and people aren't buying the Chevy Cruze anymore. One of the more fuel-efficient vehicles out there. With the decrease in gasoline prices, SUVs have become even more and more popular. So, folks, sometimes we have to look in the mirror, and it's like, okay, compare the mileage you get with now with something you could get with a little more fuel efficient. How would that equate to 20 cents more per gallon than a gas tax? Would you end up ahead or behind?
Yeah. Oh, and Ann, just to go back, mm-hmm. I found a number that I was looking for mm-hmm. on public transit spending. Ohio spends less than 44 states. wow. on public transit spending, which if you consider the number of cities we have in this, in this state,
seventh most populous state and the 45th on spending on transit. And so the group, it's called Move Ohio, which is kind of a coalition of different transit advocates across the state, including the Better Bus Co. in Cincinnati. They sent a letter to DeWine asking for an 80-20 split if there's a gas hike, a gas tax increase. 80% can go to roads, and they want 20% to go to transit, pedestrian, bike infrastructure, stuff like that. I don't see a lot of political will for that right now, but you never know. I think this group is pretty organized and really wants to make sure that these topics are on the table.
And Lord knows, those of us who've lived in Columbus have seen the battles over the years on light rail. There's just been opposition, and probably because traffic isn't that bad in Columbus. And those of you who've lived only in Columbus can say, what?
That you're just saying that because today is a federal holiday, and it was like grease lightning getting into work today.
Yeah, but if you've driven any time in your Boston's or Washington's or Seattle, Washington, or Denver, God knows, L.A., I mean, Columbus is still, I think if it were worse,
we'd have more of an outcry now, but the problem is 25 years from now, what's it going to be like?
And that's part of the problem.
And you've got to start thinking about that now.
And legislatures, especially term-limited lawmakers, are not good at thinking about far into the future. As far as they're thinking is next year, they have to run for re-election if you're in the House, and half the Senate is thinking the same thing. Yeah, that's the in-the-future thinking that's unfortunately mostly prevalent in our legislature.
And public transit is often argued, too, as a workforce development and a poverty-fighting issue. If you can find a way to get people to work without, people who don't have cars, people who, don't have this necessarily an easy ability to travel from their house to their job, it makes it a lot harder to get those folks back into the workforce and get them into good paying jobs and off of public assistance. So there's often that argument made as well.
And I think it's easy to think of this as an urban issue where the cities are the focus of a lot of, transit and busing and so forth. But there are a number of rural transit systems that are in need of funding. And I know a number of these groups took a hit last year when a particular part of sales tax was taken off the table for them.
Yeah,
Medicaid. Yeah. Can't tax Medicaid anymore, the sales tax.
We will be covering the gas tax proposal or recommendation or whatever you want to call it as time goes on. You mentioned that the transportation budget has to be on the desks of lawmakers in March.
The end of March needs to be approved. That's because it takes 90 days to take effect.
Okay.
And we need to be able to, pay for the things come the next fiscal year.
And contextually, the operating budget for all of state government is due, the 15th, folks?
March 15th,
mid-March.
Due to the legislature. The legislature has to pass it by the end of June. But, yeah, so they need to get – that's one of the reasons they need to get this thing cleared off their decks, because then they've got the state operating budget coming right behind it.
As much fun as a barrel of monkeys. Real quick, the Kasich administration is catching heat after news that the state's 88-county Medicaid programs are facing big cuts far beyond projections. What happened? I know that the DeWine administration has said they'll make this work, but
right for the rest of the year.
Why shock theater on the way out of office, Darrell Rowland?
First of all, the folks with the governor himself say he knew nothing about it. It was totally the Department of Medicaid. What happened was there was a 75% reimbursement for an administrative fee, which of course you need to do all, and this is to the counties. So county offices are the ones who actually do the nuts and bolts of handing out the state aid and all that. Suddenly it went to 50% from 75%. The counties say, we never had any notice of this. We couldn't plan. Summit County, maybe the only county, but Summit County is already talking about layoffs. Other counties are talking about having to scramble to have enough money to make this go. So, it's this weird thing in a way. Certainly politically, the Kasich administration and the former governor himself has long touted Medicaid, his Medicaid expansion. That's maybe the top pride and joy he will claim from his 8 years as governor. So it seems odd that you do this little tweak on the way out to mess with administrative reimbursements. Now, because no one knows of anything that forced this at the state level. There were no changes in federal regulations as far as we've been able to tell. But my colleague Kathy Gandisky talked to some county directors, and it's like this was a bolt from the blue. And as you say, now the change in administration, the governor's DeWine's people said, well, for this calendar year, we will make you whole, but no promises beyond the end of 2019.
Yeah, the problem, one of the big problems here is that you cut this state funding, and you also lose all the federal matching dollars, which is about twice as much as the state money. So, like, Franklin County was going to lose up $1.9 million in state funding, but they were going to lose more than $3 million in federal dollars because that's matching money that they get from the feds on through Medicaid. So, yeah, it was – I'm not sure – you know, the fact that the Kasich administration – look, this was the Kasich administration's Medicaid department. This was John Kasich's Medicaid department. To say that I didn't know this was happening, okay, maybe you didn't, but you can't – it's your fault. It's your department doing this. They don't just act on their own. They're your people.
They must have sent somebody a memo.
And this is not this was not out of the realm of John Kasich's philosophy of – although he was a big supporter of Medicaid expansion, he has been a very big non-supporter of local governments throughout his 8 years. He continuously looked for ways to stick it to local governments on funding. And so this would go right along with that, that philosophy of we're going to save some state money by making the locals figure it out.
I don't know whose article it was in that I read about this, but it said leaving this kind of mess behind 10 days you know, before you leave office is something that sometimes administrations do when an administration from the other party is taking office, not what you do to a fellow Republican.
I think you're talking about perhaps the Dispatch editorial.
Oh, maybe that was it. Okay, yeah, that was a barn burner, by the way.
Again, I would neither Jim nor I blame us, love us. We have no responsibility for those editorials.
I would never.
I'm sure Governor DeWine, though he would never admit it, is feeling that about maybe a few things, including the transportation budget. You know, I mean, the way Kasich decided to fund it was
spend down. Yeah, right.
Was money that was temporary, and whoever was going to get it next, Republican or Democrat, was going to have to figure out a fix for this. And so, you know, it just happened to be Mike DeWine. I'm sure he's happy to have the job, but that also comes with needing to sweep up some of the former guy's mess, for lack of a better term.
The detritus. We are going to take another break. We're going to continue our conversation. There's a lot more to talk about, a lot going on, I guess, down at the State House. So that was Jesse Ballmer. She's state government reporter for Cincinnati Enquirer. Also with us, Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, and Daryl Rowland, public affairs editor at the Dispatch. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. We have Daryl Rowland and Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch and Jesse Ballmer of the Cincinnati Enquirer with us. If you have a question or comment about what's going on in state government and politics, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I just want to talk about what the priorities are. The Republicans and the Democrats and the Ohio General Assembly have sort of come out and said, here's what we care about. Here's where we're going. Republicans, how do you summarize it, Jim Siegel? What are they shooting for? I know the Democrats, it's workers, and we can talk about that. But Republicans are in control. What are they looking for?
That was last week. I don't remember. Yeah. I mean, look, they didn't come up with a whole lot of a lot of specifics, but they do want to do things like criminal justice reforms. Mm-hmm. They want to, I mean, look, this is back from issue one from last year, this idea that we're incarcerating too many drug abusers and
nonviolent
mm-hmm. criminals, and I think they're going to continue to look into that and hopefully come up with some solutions that some folks think are fair and will, you know, save some money and help these folks. There's a desire among the Senate president really has a desire to reduce regulations, state regulations. Again, we don't know the specifics on what he wants to get rid of, but he wants to get rid of about 30% of them by 2022.
State regulations.
Yeah, it's not a very detailed plan.
Yeah, the way the bill is drafted right now is every state agency would have to look at the number of regulations they are. Anything that says shall or will or required, and, you know, put them on an inventory, count them up, and then figure out a way to get rid of 30% of them by 2022. And there are like intermediary marks that they would have to hit.
Yeah. So there's that. They're going to do some opioid efforts again. They've got there's the heartbeat bill, the anti-abortion heartbeat bill, which has already started getting hearings and will probably pass in the next few weeks through the Senate once they get done with their hearings. So there's, you know, they've got a handful of things. I don't know if Jesse can remember any of the others off yeah. top of her head. But
I think both Republicans and Democrats are interested in strengthening human trafficking laws and mm-hmm. eliminating some loopholes, especially for younger suspects or defendants and so forth. I think both Democrats and Republicans are interested in this criminal justice reform. I think the debate will come down on, you know, what does it actually look like? We spoke a little bit to Senate Republicans last week about, you know, issue one would have eliminated a lot of drug possession, dropping it down to a misdemeanor. I don't think the Senate president wants all drug possession to be a misdemeanor. So what that actually looks like will be interesting. Right now, the bill is very bare bones. The goal that Senate Republicans have is to have hearings on this, get some input from individuals. I think include some of the ideas from Franklin County Prosecutor Ron O'Brien and Zach Klein, the city attorney in Columbus, mm-hmm. and kind of pull this all together into a bill. I think that their fear is if they write specific ideas down right now, it's just going to become a debate and get pulled apart.
Hmm. Yeah, and some of the other ideas, I think President Offoff mentioned putting another $100 million into school facilities. This is not something we've heard much about over the years because, frankly, the state has just been pouring money into this every year in the capital budget. I think we've spent now, and since the program began, I think it's about $12.1 billion on school facilities, and you can drive around anywhere in the state and see all these nice buildings mm-hmm. that we've done. But he wants to put another $100 million in there because apparently there are basically some buildings that are some schools that are ready to go, but it can't be funded yet because the money's not available. So rather than wait until the next capital budget, he wants to put $100 million in now, which will get a handful of districts, including, I think, Southwestern in Franklin County, moved up on the list.
You know, a Republican state senator from Hilliard, Stephanie, is it Coons?
Coonsy,
yeah, is proposing a tax break for teachers who purchase their own supplies. We did a show on it. I mean, and the question is whether the state proposal would mirror federal deductions for those supplies. There's already a federal deduction for that. But a spokesperson for the Ohio Federation of Teachers, which is the union, called the proposed deduction a good gesture that falls short of dealing with a greater problem. What's their complaint, Jesse?
Yeah, so I wrote about this. Coonsy's proposal would essentially, right now, there's a federal, you can deduct up to $250 that you spend on school supplies or furniture or computers or anything really for the classroom. And right now there's no state way to get, you know, a deduction for that. And so this would say if you spend more than that $250 for the federal amount up to $500, you could deduct that from your state taxes. So it's a little bit of help for teachers who already spend an average of $478 yeah. on their classrooms each year. But obviously, Melissa Cropper's complaint is if you just properly funded the schools, teachers wouldn't have to be paying for these things out of their own pocket.
There was also some questions at the time that we were talking about it on the show that a lot of teachers are starting to do GoFundMe campaigns to raise money for their classroom projects or whatever they're doing. And there was talk of maybe putting restrictions on some of those kinds of things or creating some standards. Did you hear anything about that?
That was not part of this
okay.
bill.
Okay.
So I'm not sure.
Okay.
Isn't that kind of pitiful in this day and age in our state where we have
teachers
to do that?
Teachers are doing GoFundMe. Yeah.
to buy. I mean, I assume they're not buying frills and stuff for the classroom.
It's probably, there are lots of good things.
Probably pretty basic things. And we should address that, Jim knows a lot more about this, but there is a new school funding proposal of some sort coming. So can I kick this to Jim? Because he's talked to the principals.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll fund all the classroom supplies.
Yeah. Yes.
And everybody will be happy.
Yeah, well, it's coming. I mean, look, I don't know when it's coming. The two folks who are working on it, representatives Bob Cupp and John Patterson, every time I ask them, they say they're still working on it. This was supposed to be introduced in November. We are now approaching the end of February. So I don't know. I don't know when it's coming, and I don't know what exactly it's all going to say. But the fact that it hasn't been introduced yet leads me to believe there's something in there that somebody's still looking at going, that's not quite right, because if everyone looked at it and said, this is a great formula and let's start paying for it, then we would have seen it by now, because that's how politics works.
And they haven't shared even the kind of any kind of sense about what they're looking at?
Well, they've given some broad ideas of what they want to do. It's all about let's see what the numbers show. You can list any goal you want, but until the numbers come out and we see how your formula works, and we don't really know what you're really doing here. So we'll wait and see. But I am surprised that this tax thing with the teachers hasn't passed yet. And it's like this tax and the tampon tax. I cannot believe we haven't put a tampon tax exemption in yet. And I can't believe we still don't have a deduction for teachers who are paying for classroom supplies. I mean, considering that the anti-tax Republicans have been in charge now for 20-some years, it's always surprised me when tax breaks that would seem politically advantageous have not yet been enacted. I always wonder what's going on.
What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but it's surprising. Well, like the pink tax, as they called it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been something that they've just basically let the Democrats continue to hammer away on that issue for years rather than just pass the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a Republican co-sponsor, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we had that last session, too, and it didn't pass then either. So I don't know. It just strikes me as unusual that it would seem to be a pretty popular. Both of those things would seem to be pretty popular, and their tax breaks. So what?
Well, and the pink tax passed almost unanimously in the House, and it just didn't make it through on the Senate side,
despite how the miracles that occurred during lame duck session. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. So that bill already has like a hearing. So I mean, you hate to be overly optimistic on things that have been introduced over and over and over and over again, but it does seem like there's some movement on that bill, which has been pushed recently by Representative Bridget Kelly from the Cincinnati area.
Switching gears now, Planned Parenthood and Dayton, Planned Parenthood Ohio and Dayton abortion and a Dayton abortion clinic filed a lawsuit last week to block a ban on dilation evacuation. That's that common second trimester abortion procedure that's been banned. What's the basis for the lawsuit, Jesse?
So essentially, they are alleging that this violates the due process rights of women, and it makes it unnecessarily complicated to obtain an abortion. Essentially, this dilation and evacuation is the most common second trimester abortion procedure. The alternative is something like, inducing a birth.
It's
essentially
still pretty rare, though, isn't it? I read that just 5% of abortions nationally.
Dilation and evacuation.
Yeah.
It's pretty common.
Oh, it's pretty common.
In Ohio, at least.
Okay.
and I think nationally. Okay. So the alternatives are pretty uncommon. Okay. First trimester abortions are the most common procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially it would eliminate this procedure, which would eliminate a lot of abortions that are done up to after 12 weeks. And so that is something that they are suing over. It's something that would have taken effect in, you know, like mid to late March, but they're hoping to have a federal court judge down in the Cincinnati area block it before that happens.
Hey, this, of course, is during the Kasich administration, there were 21 restrictions added to abortion. And this was number 21. And many of them are not in effect because they are at various stages of legal challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Some have gone into effect. This is the one that the proponents labeled this dismemberment abortion, just graphically, you know, what actually happens. And the legislation actually calls it that. So that is in Ohio law right now, that kind of language. You know, as Jesse says, it's the standard that the U.S. Supreme Court has said is, does it place an undue burden on someone seeking, on a woman seeking an abortion? So that is the legal standard. And as Jim said, you know, this week we're moving on to what's called the heartbeat bill. That would bring the ban down to when a fetal heartbeat can be detected, which is, what, 6 weeks at the
usually
earliest.
Before a woman knows she's pregnant.
Yeah, 6 to 8 weeks or something like that into the pregnancy. So that's going to be the battle royale, but we all know it's going to pass because the majorities are in favor. Came within one vote of overriding John Kasich veto, mm-hmm. John Kasich's veto of it in December, of becoming Ohio law, so
Mike DeWine has said he'll sign it.
He has said many times he will sign it. That's just a matter of when, not if. And then we'll let the court battle start on that. And again, the anti-abortion rights forces say now's the time to start these flowing up towards Washington because we have a new Supreme Court alignment now.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the dream is to, will this be the one to overturn Roe v. Wade? Now, you can look at some of the more recent rulings, how Chief Justice Roberts has ruled, and think that may be a pipe dream, but that is, that is their basis.
That's the end goal.
Yeah.
A bill pending that would revamp the rules for disposal of fetal remains from abortions. Why the revamp? I know there was a big hue and cry a few years ago when Mike DeWine was Attorney General over that issue. What's going on?
I believe it's a reintroduced bill. It's pretty similar to what was proposed before, which would essentially require either burial or cremation of fetal remains.
Yeah. Yet another issue to get in the way of, you know, making it more difficult to perform abortions and
afford them too, I would imagine. Yeah. It'll increase the price. Well, that's it. That's all the time we have. I want to thank you guys for joining us today. Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And Daryl Rowland, public affairs editor at the Columbus Dispatch, thanks to you as well.
Fun times as always, Ann.
As always. Jesse Balmert, state government reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Listen, if you want to like All Sides on Facebook, you can check that out. You can follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me on Twitter, too, at Ann Fisher. WOSU. Thanks so much for your attention today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.